Welcome in, everybody. It is Inside the Gamecocks, the show, the final hour of our live super stream. I am Phil Mad Dog Mullinax. He is JC Sherbert, and it has been way too long, but we are joined by none other than SEC Mike himself, Michael Bratton. Good to have you on, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. What kind of operation are we running here? I heard, you know, crazy accents already running late. This may be my last time.
I know, man. I'm embarrassed.
That's right.
I'm embarrassed. But no, that was I was doing a Lou Holtz impersonation. Anyway,
I thought it was a leprechaun. Okay, so that makes sense.
I'll just say that right now, Mike. I
can't even get back into character now.
Now Lou Holtz is a leprechaun, or was a leprechaun. I went and found my pot of gold. I did it. I'm going to tell you this right now, Michael Bratton.
He's like the man, king of leprechauns up there. He's the last one to win a national championship.
Yeah, dude. He killed it. But maybe this year it's different for Notre Dame, right?
You guys remember that he had a viral photo. I think he was at some political rally, and he had a bottle of Crown. You remember that?
Yeah, dude. That's all. I bet. I mean, he's a dramatically small person if you've ever seen him in person or live. And I bet not very much Crown could put that guy on his butt. I'm not true, J.G. Sherbert. I'm from East Liverpool, Ohio. We drink Crown for breakfast up there. I tell you right now, it's cold. Sometimes it snows on the ground. I have to walk to a job. And I took the Crown out of the bag, you know.
Yes. At Carolina, you've had some real characters up there as coaches.
Yeah.
We are not one for personality down here. Now
Steve Spurrier aside, which he's the goat of all press conferences, I like listening to Will Muschamp better than any of them. And because I'm dorky like that. Because Muschamp would drop some, like, he would go like football 401 and talk over everybody's head. And like, I didn't know what he was talking about either. So I would sit there and look, and I would go research and be like, oh, that's what he meant. The nub side. No, what's that? Okay. And so I learned a lot of football listening to the guy. But anyway, Mike, really good to see you, man. Congrats on all the success and all the work. You guys have been killing it. SEC yeah. Media Days. I'll never go to that event again unless it's to broadcast. But you guys were fantastic with all your interviews. Cousin Shane's looking great and chilling. And we hear tale he may take an RV to the Carolina-Tennessee game this year. And that's a game I'm going to be in town for, so I have to check it out. But, you know, you've said some interesting things. I think you were one of the first people, and I tweeted this a while back. I said, I don't think enough people are kind of putting two and two together with Kendall Brown's offense and Lenore Sellers. You know, I think a lot of folks out there are just like, well, that's the South Carolina offense is what it is. And it's kind of, well, this Lenore's has to get better. That's not really what the case is. Kind of expand on that for me a little bit, because you watched a lot of Arkansas when he was there. You know, obviously you see Tennessee and that style of offense, a lot of similarities, Mississippi State, et cetera. Go into that a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm sure you guys have discussed this, but I think for me, the number one key in all of that for Carolina specifically is how this offensive system helps an offensive line, where Tennessee is, yeah, they've had Darnell Wright. He was a high-end NFL draft pick, but he's about the only one that I can think of that was a high-end NFL caliber offensive lineman, yet at Tennessee, they're running it pretty well. Same thing could be said for Ole Miss. You know, they've had, I'm not saying they've had bad offensive linemen, but you don't need the Georgia, Alabama offensive linemen of old to be very, very successful in this scheme. So I think it really helps as you're bringing in, I believe the number's 8 transfer offensive linemen to Columbia this offseason. This scheme, whether they've been in it 1 year or multiple years, it really, really aids that the development and just the pace they go with. I think it's a phenomenal fit for Carolina, and more specifically with Lenore Sellers. I mean, I think this scheme does such a great job of helping the quarterback identify, all right, look here. If it's not there, look here. And if it's not there, then take off. And I think that's exactly what Lenore Sellers needs. And some people may look at that as a critique of maybe he can't do X, Y, and Z. We've not heard that from Trinidad. We've not heard that from Hendon Hooker. Not that he's been super successful in the NFL, but again, the job of these guys, believe it or not, I always chuckle when, you know, back in the day it was Nick Saban and Urban Meyer. They can't develop an NFL quarterback. That's not their job. Their job is to win college football games, and those guys eventually got to it anyway. But Kendall Browse just does such a good job, and pairing him with Randy Clements, who I have seen by people that I trust have him as the best offensive line coach in the Southeastern Conference now, just based on their track record, the results they've put on the field with the talent they've had to work with. I think that this could be the coordinator hire of the offseason in the SEC.
Talking with Michael Bratton from that SEC podcast. I've known Mike for years, like way back. Like where was it? You were a writer somewhere, and we used to email back and forth before you got on.
Yeah,
Saturday Down South.
That was probably the first time we ran. So before that, I was working at NFL.com, and then prior to that, Fox Sports. But
yeah, it's right when 24/7 started. Yeah, right when 24/7 started.
You were one of the first to come on the show, so I was eternally grateful, and I'll always return the favor.
Thank you so much. So you know, obviously being located in Tennessee, you guys talk Tennessee a lot, and you got Cousin Shane there. Obviously, he's a Tennessee guy, and y'all talk a lot about the Vols. And you've seen this now. Heupel and Kendall are a little different. I mean, there's subtleness. Jeff Lebby's a little different. Lane Kiffin's a little different. But you know, you mentioned kind of what Tennessee and how they were able to run the football. Kind of explain that to our listeners, because I think sometimes you know you hear the name Briles. You think back to Baylor, and then you think Texas style system, air raid kind of, and there's some air raid stuff in it, but it's really not an air raid. It's really fun. Josh Heupel at Missouri, after then he hooks up with Lebby, a lot different than Josh Heupel at Tennessee, and it's been very effective, like you said. Yeah, kind of talk about what you've seen just specifically from Tennessee. And how they're able to, as long as they're not at a big disadvantage with a great defense in a game, they've been able to move it about against just about everybody. They kind of finally solved the Georgia thing this past year. It was a loss, but they put 41 on the board. What are some specifics? Is it the splits? Is it the spacing? Is it the pacing? Just kind of get into that a little bit from what you've seen.
Yeah, you mentioned, man, that still burns to hear about that Georgia game. But yeah. had they scored 44 when the kicker was right there, it would have been a victory. But alas, yeah, I'm over it. It's just been 11 months. I'm totally over it. But to go back to your question, yeah, this offense, again, the beauty of it is I think just the way they line up with the wide splits. So anybody that doesn't know, they put the receivers out literally as far as you possibly could, as close to the sideline. So what you're doing is you're forcing the defense immediately before the ball is snapped. You're forcing them to kind of pick their poison. Are they going to defend these receivers that are all the way at the perimeter, or are you going to put more people in the box? And the quarterback, as long as he's got any sense in the world, you know, he can count to six or seven, right? Where are the defenses? Are they keyed up on the pass? They keyed up on the run? It just simplifies everything. And another beautiful part of it is they're going to take multiple shots per game. Heupel usually averages 2 to 3 per quarter, literally just go balls, right?
Yeah.
So you're spread as far as you possibly can, sideline to sideline. And now there's a constant threat that the deep ball is going to come. So you have to guard the back end. Otherwise, the ball is going to go right over your head. And while everybody's panicked about all this, they just run it into a light box. And that's why Heupel, Kiffin, these guys have had tremendous success running the football. Alex Golish, of course, was Tennessee's offensive coordinator. He said he said this offseason, we're going to run the hell out of the ball at Auburn. Because, again, that is the foundation of what this offense is running the football. Even though there's been a lot of prolific quarterbacks and receivers in it, it's all based upon the ground game. So that's kind of the bread and butter of this offense.
Yeah, you know, through the years, we've talked about schemes a lot, you know, at South Carolina and others. And I've always thought, for one reason, you know, in the SEC, I think you do have to run the ball. I think even Mike Leach, who scores on everybody, you know, he didn't score as much, you know, just throwing it like he does. Now he'd get after some people's ass a little bit, right? You know, and they, like that Auburn game where they came back from 25 down or whatever. You know, I'm not saying he wasn't successful, but I've always thought, you know, a team, you know, no matter how you do it, run the ball. And that's why I thought Dan Mullen at Florida and then at Mississippi State and then at Florida again, I thought that style of offense was great, you know, until this stuff started creeping into the league. Now I may think Mullen's still a good offense for this league. You can run it, but I just think, I think that's the key that you mentioned there about running the ball. So a dual threat quarterback in it. Now Hooker could run a little, Nico could run, even Joe Milton could run a little bit. I don't know, Fazeon Brandon, and I don't know with McIntyre, not really a runner. Is he got some, a little bit of wheels?
No, not much. And he weighs about a 160, and I think he's like 6'6". So
he looks like Matt Jones without the speed. Remember Matt Jones from Arkansas? Yeah. But yeah, so but those quarterbacks could run a little bit. I think Lane's quarterbacks could run a little bit. None of those guys are Lenora Sellers running the ball as far as being able to break tackles. Also, Sellers was timed 22 miles an hour on the catapult. That's flying. I think it was 22, wasn't it, Phil?
Yeah, about 22.
That's 22. Chain speed right there.
Dude,
right.
That's insane. So put on your fantasy football hat a little bit and take me back to the great offense out of Tennessee in 2022. What if you'd have put, I mean, keep Hooker's arm, you know, because I thought Hidden was one of the most accurate quarterbacks downfield I'd seen in college football that year. But what if he had Sellers' body and speed running the ball? What kind of, you know, what kind of like extra weapon is that? And so the overall, my question is, how much does a guy that can run like Sellers add something to this system?
Man, JC, you're just hitting all the highlights. Georgia last year, Carolina 22, where the Gamecocks cheated with their wristbands and all that.
The conspiracy theory,
wristbands and sand.
No, I'm not one of those wackos. I don't believe that, but I do think it's comical. But, you know, I don't know how the wristbands helped Carolina's offense score 60 some odd points, but that's neither here nor there. To answer your question, yeah, I mean, it's monumental, right? So, but I think there's a fine line there, because in a 9-game SEC and a Clemson, how often do you want to be running your quarterback? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's got to be factored in as well. But man, Sellers is a tank. And if there's anybody that can survive this, it's going to be a guy like that. So I would, again, I have no clue, but I would imagine some of the, you know, the Kent States and of the world, we probably are not running Sellers much at all. But mm-hmm. when we get to a Georgia game, when we get to an Alabama, you know, I would imagine he's got to be running the ball 10 to 15 times. And particularly when we get near the goal line, just because it gives us such an advantage where it forces the defense to play 11 on 11. That's something we failed to do last year. Mm-hmm. Our audience calls it the Shula shackles. We've taken those shackles off. So unleash Lenora Sellers. I think it'll be just tremendous for this Carolina offense. And that's something I've not even considered, JC, but I think that's an excellent point of all the success we've seen of this system in this conference in particular. I don't know that there's been a runner to Sellers caliber. The only one that comes to mind, and he's a completely different player, but it was probably RG3, who of course won the Heisman Trophy at Baylor. Now again, he's about half the size of Sellers, so maybe Sellers will put up twice as much rushing yards.
Yeah, no doubt. And I'm with you on the design runs. He ran KJ Jefferson quite a bit at Arkansas. I do not expect that style of run where they'd run KJ Jefferson into a wall. KJ is just a big guy, probably not as fast as Lenora's. Lenora's running style is much more, it's a little more fluid. He's more elusive, that kind of thing. I mean, but he's also one of the, he's very difficult to tackle. Very difficult. I'm intrigued by what you said about the space, because there have been all these bunch formations and condensed with Shula. I mean, Carolina looked like they almost intentionally drug everybody into the box, right? And a lot of coaches, there's a lot of bunch formations that work. I'm not hating on that. But for him, you know, you give space, you give spacing, and this goes for Nick Harbor too. You give them space, it's hard because they're so fast and big, you know, it's going to be hard. Tell me about Tennessee, because Tennessee's back on the schedule this year, as we mentioned earlier. How significant was the Farouk injury to the secondary? And I want to ask you about Tennessee's defense, because I think, honestly, if I'm a Tennessee fan, I'm not too worried about who the quarterback is. I think this system is pretty quarterback friendly. You can plug guys into it. I think they're good at receiver. I mean, I think Matthew's coming into his own. Staley, he got out of the state. Carolina started recruiting him midway through. You know, so you can send a thank you for him and Jalen Hyatt. But I love their backs. I think Deshaun Bishop and the other guy are like two of the most underrated backs. Nobody talks about them, and they should. Right. I like the offensive line. I mean, I like what they've got on offense. Defensively, you know, the word on Jim Knowles is usually it takes a year to learn the system. I don't know. Yeah, maybe that's overrated. I like pieces, but pass rusher and now safety to me, you know, from what my Vol people tell me, it's an issue. So tell me it's not an issue. Tell me it is an issue. Just kind of break that down for us.
Oh, no, I certainly think it's an issue. And for those that don't follow Jim Knowles, of course, I didn't either until they came to the SEC, but he likes to roll out three safeties. So the fact that one of them gone for the season is obviously not good. Now, they're already kind of toying with they added a nickel from Kansas State named Quay Moss, I believe is his name. You know, he could play a little safety as well. So if they want to rotate in, but now all of a sudden now you got a hole at nickel. So not a great position to be in. But Tennessee's defense, it's interesting because if you're going to play three safeties, you can only put two linebackers on the field.
And they like their linebackers, yeah.
The linebackers is their best position. So maybe in a weird way, again, I don't want to, it's never good to lose a player, but maybe it forces Jim Knowles to put more linebackers on the field. He's already kind of suggested that with the Chaz Coleman incident for anybody, I feel like most people are aware of that, but they added a big time transfer from Penn State. He was supposed to be their designated pass rusher. And for whatever reason, it didn't work out. We'll just put it that way. And he's no longer on the team. So there's a huge hole at pass rusher. Jim Knowles has already said, you know, we're going to tinker with putting some of these linebackers as a designated pass rusher. So I think you got to put more linebackers on the field. If there's six or seven of them you really trust, I don't know how you roll out a two linebacker system all season. So we after losing a safety, you might have fewer safeties on the field, but the early returns in camp are now the defensive line's a little bit of an issue. Now, is that because the offensive line's good and Tennessee's got some good running backs like you alluded to? That's always the mystery of training camp. When somebody's doing well, the other side's horrible and can't play a lick. So I do think, you know, that's the biggest question mark, I think, is the defense for Tennessee, because I'm right there with you. I think the offense, I mean, Josh Heupel is just, he's already proven himself year after year after year. They've had a different starting quarterback every year. Going back to 22 and really even, you could count because Joe Milton started the first Hendon Hooker year, but it just doesn't seem to phase the production.
Nah, it's always a productive system. Wrap one more question here for you about Tennessee, and then a final wrap up question, and then we'll let you out. So, I think though the shame of it is if there's personnel issues in Knoxville, I think the tell's going to be at Georgia Tech in week two. That's in a stadium where Tennessee, there's going to be half the stadium will be orange. It's just how it is. There's tons of alums in Atlanta. It's right there. It's a smaller stadium. Georgia Tech doesn't have many fans. That's a Georgia Tech team that lost their offensive coordinator. They lost Haynes King. They're kind of rebuilding on offense this year. If Georgia Tech can score and go up and down the field, I think that's an alarm. If not, man, maybe it'd probably be okay. But Tennessee's schedule, man, I looked at it, and Carolina's the eighth game in a row they play. But because I mean, the road games are Georgia Tech and I believe Arkansas. And then it's not, you know, as long as Tennessee's not like very deficient on defense, it won't surprise me at all if Texas loses in Neyland. Not at all. You've watched a lot of Texas football over the years, right? You know, this is what happens. You know, and then Auburn comes down, Alabama comes down. I'm not sold on Alabama. I think Auburn's probably a year away. It could be a lot of points in that game. There's a realistic chance Tennessee is either sitting on one loss or undefeated coming in, just because, yes, they may be deficient in some areas, but they match up. Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say they match up well with Texas roster-wise, but you got to factor in the Longhorn factor, you know, there. Like Florida last season. They just went like, all right, go get me a bed because I'm taking down my pants and crapping all over. Bevo's going to crap in the bed. So it wouldn't surprise me. It's 110,000 people. You know, they don't play I mean, you know, their toughest team in the Big 12 for years, they played them on a neutral site every year. So, look, I'm just saying, talk to me about that and kind of your key to them getting there. And do you think Tennessee does have a favorable early schedule at least?
Yeah, and you say all those nice things. I've heard that the spread at Georgia Tech could be anywhere from 10 to 13 points. I don't know that I've seen an official one put out yet. But all those nice things you just said, given how long I follow Tennessee football, they're going to lose to Georgia Tech. This will be null and void. So trust me, when Tennessee is expected to do big things, that's when they always lay an egg. When even going back to 98, feels like 98, Tennessee says all the time. This was the year post Peyton Manning, and Tennessee was not going to be very good. So when you don't think they're going to be very good is usually when they surprise you. But yeah, no, I like a lot of what you said, and I don't know if you've seen me predict this, but I have Tennessee making the playoff because I think they can navigate this schedule and get to 10-2. Now, am I guaranteeing it? No. And I do think if they make the playoff, they'd be the last team in the Southeastern Conference to make it. But you could make an argument for dang near 6, 7, 8 teams, I think, in this conference to make it. And it's and particularly at the tail end, I think it's going to be 8. The only one I'm convinced of, JC, is Georgia. I think the rest of them, everybody's all over Texas. I think Texas will make it, but I think Oklahoma's better than Texas. So I got Oklahoma, Texas, Georgia, and then the final one, Tennessee. But you could tell me Ole Miss. You could tell me A&M. You could tell me Carolina. You could tell me LSU. I mean, I just think it's going to be a bloodbath, and these teams are going to kill each other this year. And like you said, something that I've circled, I'm glad you said it, JC, because I think this is going to be so big this year. Tennessee plays Carolina 8 games in 8 weeks. Meanwhile, Carolina has 2 weeks to prepare for that game. So I think South Carolina, they're probably not going to be favored to beat Tennessee, but I have no problem picking Carolina to win that game. And there's many of these on the schedule. Another one I'll give you, LSU at Auburn. It's their 8th game in 8 weeks. I think those games are really going to kill these teams that have to play not only 8 and 8 weeks, but like 7 or 8 of them are all power opponents or even Southeastern Conference teams. That's a brutal, brutal grind. And I'm thankful that they wised up and said, all right, no more of this. They should have done it this year. Yeah. But next year starts in 27. We'll all have 2 byes. It's almost cruel to put these guys through 1 bye.
That surprised me. South Carolina's lucky because it's 6 games a bye, then another 6. Also, for that matchup, looking way down the road, and you don't know what's going to be happening. And the thing's injuries. You know, you got injuries that mount up and fatigue. But with as fast as these two offenses are going, I would rather honestly be the team that has the week off, because it's just, I mean, good God. I mean, they ran out of fireworks last time, and I'm trying to remind you of it, but they may run out of fireworks again, and it may be an overtime game. I mean, you may see something crazy. Sorry, man, that's good. So any final thoughts about this season, you know, and kind of like a quick one, you know, 20 seconds on Clemson LSU and any final thoughts, and we'll get you out of here. And we really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, Clemson sucks as always. So, I mean, we could just write that off here. But LSU, I don't know what to make of them. You know, their first couple of games, Clemson, of course, they should whip Clemson, but I call him Lane Whiffen for a reason. He whiffs on a lot of these big time games. Ole Miss week 3 and A&M week 4. If LSU doesn't come out firing on all cylinders, their playoff hopes could be done the first month of the season. LSU, again, I'm not hating on them, because I think with the talent they have, they can win the national championship. But I'm not picking them to make the playoff, because I just think it's too many new pieces, and I've seen enough of Sam Levitt. I don't think he's a bad quarterback. But I think he's highly overrated. I don't get all this love for Sam Levitt based on going back and watching all his games.
He's interesting. You know, I think the best moment he had was when they fell behind to Texas in the playoff and he let them back. And Arizona State just got red hot. But then the next year, you know, he's kind of pedestrian at times.
Yeah.
But I don't, you know, Kiffin, we'll see. I mean, Kiffin does do a great job with quarterbacks, and there are guys, but you know, Austin Simmons was supposed to set the world on fire last year. He wasn't, kind of got hurt, but then lo and behold, here comes Trinidad Chambliss. So he kind of, right. Lane Kiffin kind of had a golden horseshoe with that, because if they'd had to go through with Austin Simmons, I don't think they'd do anything like they did last year. He may not even get the LSU job.
I mean, no, you know. And now he's taking, I don't know if you've seen it, he's taking credit for Trinidad, and I hear Trinidad is none too kind to hear that. So I know, it just adds a little bit more fuel to that week three matchup, wow. LSU right. at Ole Miss.
Oxford, Mississippi, I need to call in the state. It's going to be like a time to kill. They're going to need to call in the state police and the FBI and all that. You know, that's going to get crazy, man. Mike, we really appreciate you joining. You know, we're our third hour here. I do a lot of granular football stuff on our the morning podcast, and then spend some time. This is the clown show. That's why we call it. So it's kind of
well, I fit right in there.
Yeah, dude. I mean, that's why you're a logical guest for us. But man, keep up the good work. Hopefully, you know, you tell old cousin Shane he still owes me, and I saw he's going on podcast and being a guest before, so he owes us. He promised to us he would come on, so you tell him we're mad at him, but we hope he does bring that RV to Columbia, brother. It'd be great to have a little fellowship with you guys that weekend.
Hey, absolutely, and hey, I've been there. I get mad at Shane all the time, and then he opens his mouth, and he wins me over in 30 seconds. You know?
Yeah,
you just can't help it.
I can't help it. Thanks
for
Mike.
Having me, guys.
Be good, man. Brother. That's Michael Bratton, SEC Mike, that SEC podcast. Love talking to that guy. Love talking to that guy.
Yeah, it's been too long. So, been too long. It's good.
Been to too long.
Cycling the guests through again here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Once again, shameless plug for fourquarterfriday.com. Live blog from all the high school football action coming up tonight. Phil doesn't know he's going to have to update that at some point this season, but I'm going to talk to him about that after the show.
That's all right.
Right now on fourquarterfriday.com, you can get all the reschedules. There's been some stuff canceled, a lot of stuff going on. I know everybody out there is somewhat of a high school football fan. Also, it's been too long, probably since you've been to Gamecock Tradition, so get thee over there. I heard JB this morning talk about a bunch of Nike stuff. Certainly appreciate their sponsorship. Yes, Chief Sports app. Download that.
Yeah.
Apple, Google. If you want to keep up with the high school football action, we got several teams live streaming on that. You can also get all of our shows on the Chief Sports app. That's on the App Store for Apple and Google Play or Google for if you're an Android user. If you have the green text, go to Google Play. If you have the blue text, go to Apple. Right?
That's right.
For all the people eating poop in their backyard.
That's all the poop and booger eaters.
That's an illusion of yesterday. Not going to go there today, though.
No.
McKellar Enterprises chat box catch up coming up. And we'll talk a little Gamecock football, man. Shoot. 2 weeks from today, man, this will be our last the show because we'll have the preview show
right,
on Friday.
That's right.
And the tailgate show on Saturday. Got to crank out some new music for that. Working on a couple of projects. All right, we'll be back after this on Inside the Gamecocks.
Welcome back, everybody. Inside the Gamecocks, the show here. Final segment of the show on a Thirsty Thursday edition. Big thanks to Michael Bratton for dropping in.
Yeah, thanks to Phil for booking the guest, too.
I'm trying my hardest to get people on the show. And
it's hard. Pimping ain't easy, man.
Pimping ain't easy, no. Some people need to, you know, well... Remember where they come from. Let's put it that way.
Remember where they come from.
Some people need to remember where they come from.
I got you, man. All right. So McKellar Enterprises chat box. Luke RJ with always on point. I got the top four receivers is Harbor, Murph, Black, Bennett. That's plausible. I mean, really, I don't know that I'd have it in that order, but I think that's probably that would be my top four.
Yeah.
You know, that would be my top four. And I don't know what order they're going to be. Yeah. I don't know what order they're going to be in. I mean, you know, they all production wise could do a lot better. You know, have a chance to do a lot better than their career highs. You know, I think Mazio caught 30 passes. Nick was, 30 catch guy last year. Donovan Murph, 19. DJ Black's caught more passes in his career at Limestone, but at UCF, so yeah. Power 4 level, 22 receptions last year. So we'll see what happens. And really, the guy and in this system, if it's clicking, the guy with the most receptions may not be your best receiver. It may, you know, as far as your biggest threat. So ideally you have two or three guys though that make it plays every game. Luke says Muschamp will try to bully reporters. Some of them, you know, he had a good relationship with most of those guys. I do think there may have been some folks at the time working the beat that were maybe a little intimidated by him.
Yeah, yeah. he's intense.
When he gets intense, he is. He's the nicest guy in the world. Yeah. But, he's very, you know.
I'm like you, though. I used to love just listening because he'd break into just talking ball, right? Like breaking down plays and explaining how things work. And I'm like, oh, man, this is great. I learned a lot today.
Yeah. So, I did. Yeah. And he's good at it. I think he did that because nobody would know. You know, they were, huh?
There's no retort, right?
Lance says not gonna. All right, so Cockweed says Lou Holtz would have two strawberry shakes from Bernie's before home games. Yeah, he liked his milkshakes.
Man,
you know, get me a milkshake, and you don't let that ginger Michael Flint near it. I'm gonna fire you,
soulless ginger.
He has no soul. It's been a proven fact of science. God, I gotta stop. Lou goes. Yeah, SEC Mike and Cousin Shane post really good content. Absolutely.
Yeah, man.
Mm-hmm. Luke says Shane Beamer may sub in Brady Hunt at quarterback when we get to the goal line. Shake my head. Well, that's worked every time.
That Hunt stunt or whatever you want to call it.
they never got down there against Clemson because they scored on two long passes. But
right.
Mm-hmm. That's probably coming. I don't know if that's a Shane Beamer thing or a Mike Furry thing. I would imagine maybe it was Furry.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
and I look, Kendall Browse does wonky, crazy stuff like that too. He has his whole career,
mm-hmm.
So don't be shocked if that happens.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we have any defensive players throwing passes or anything down there, but it wouldn't surprise
me. Yeah, there's a big difference between players lining Brady Hunt up in a kind of a. Tush pushes thing and there's a difference between that at the 1 yard line and what they did to Tennessee that day. See, bringing up bad memories to Bratton about.
They go back.
Well, let's talk about 21 and 23.
Right, right. Yeah.
Okay. And you think about this, Phil, you know, when you talk about Tennessee, that 23 game, they ran the ball over Carolina's
defense. Yeah, it just couldn't stop the run.
It couldn't stop the run at all. So that was weird. Bruin says, let Shane know, Cousin Shane. We're throwing sand and wearing wristbands at the game this year. Yeah. Mike knows. Michael Bratton knows it's preposterous. It's just that's one of those things that lives on Twitter forever. It's crazy. Luke wants to see Tennessee wear the orange helmets again. Hmm. Yeah, Carolina, Tennessee used to play Halloween weekend every year.
Yeah.
And I remember Lane Kiffin, I think they debuted the Tennessee black Halloween uniforms in 2009. That's when all this Lane Kiffin, Carolina can't beat him. He's one of those coaches that's done really well.
Right.
You know, you make the pump and gas comment, and then you just beat him. It's whatever. It's that sad.
Yeah.
But it hadn't mattered. Ole Miss, he's beaten him three times in Tennessee. That Tennessee team was probably not as good as Carolina's 2009 team. It was just a bad night. It was raining. Mm-hmm. See, they played football in the rain that night.
Yeah, see?
Miserable night in Knoxville. Miserable trip. Up from Columbia because I-40 was closed. So you had to go to Johnson City and then come down.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The extra hour and a half to get there. Oh, God.
Yeah, and we went up Friday night, so it wasn't like – because there's a back way you can take through the mountains to get over. But that was just no mas. You know, just up Johnson City, down, and then coming back. I mean, and they beat Carolina pretty good that night. It was a big win for them. Probably one of their best wins of the year. They beat Carolina – badly that year, and they beat Georgia at home that year, like 45-19. They got the 7 wins and played Virginia Tech in the Peach Bowl and got smoked. And then Lane was out, to Southern Cal after that.
Hello, Coach O. Hey, this is Coach O. I'm calling you from Tennessee, but I'm about to get on a plane to go to Southern California. Oh, the babies are good out there. I'm gonna follow Lane Kiffin to California.
Craiger's mad because it's hot. He's sick of it.
Yeah.
I don't blame you.
It's a pain right now. It gets to that point in the summer where you're just like, we're so over this.
I'm not going to talk about this right now because I don't want you guys to talk about how warm it is in February. There's a little nipping.
It's feeling good. It's feeling good up there, ain't it? Yeah.
Mid-60s. Is there a game? Yeah, there's high school football tonight. I was back in my element, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Deputy Smitty chimes in. Always love hearing from the deputy. Didn't realize Tennessee was coming in. Haven't played 8 weeks in a row. I love it. That can be significant. And, you know, one thing I wanted to bring up, and I'll put this on the Insiders Forum later with a little more context, with this whole, you know, there's certain people that want to – it's kind of sad. And part of it is how coaches handle injury news these days.
Right, yeah.
And part of it is probably also based on, you know, maybe Beamer in the past holding out hope for a guy that could have come back and he didn't. And so there's this – but it's still wrong regardless. There's this lack of trust as far as, you know, Beamer talking about it. And I know the quotes he's given – through time about, you know, the start of the season and all that. He may have even said game one back in the spring. People have to realize it's a process. You know, Shane Beamer cannot be expected to say anything except what the doctors are telling him. Shane's not qualified to sit there and diagnose these guys and then 6 months before they're supposed to be back, give an accurate time. Mm. And he said, I don't see any, you know, and so I don't think he's lying. Okay, I don't think there's this big grand conspiracy. It's like I feel strongly about that as I do about, you know, Dylan Stewart's not going to be like, you know, people want to compare him to Juice Wells in that situation. I think he's keeping people updated. I don't think you can get into what's exactly wrong with him because of HIPAA laws. Now, do some coaches hide behind that? Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Are coaches, college coaches in general, not forthcoming with injuries? Absolutely. But I think people need to give Beamer a break on that. I also think from a coaching standpoint, and this hit me while we were talking to Bratton, you know, this year's different because there is only one open date and they've been two. They've been having two. Like some years they have one, but you know, so you don't have two open dates, right? You only have one, and it comes six games in. So you got four after the first two, four power four teams break, and then six to end the season. Now, this probably, you know, is something that gets lost on people. You have 10 power five games in a row with 1 week off. When you have an injury, your chances of re-aggravating it and messing it up, statistically, it gets higher the more your body wears down. What causes your body to wear down? Playing football in right. games. That's why they call it recovery time, you know, and all that good stuff. So even if they were 98% of the way there, you know, you do not. It would be coaching malpractice if they played either one of these guys against one of these two teams coming up and they re-injured it. And I guarantee you, everybody that's pissed at Shane Beamer about, because we talked about Cousin Shane earlier, about, oh, he's lying or whatever. You know, I guarantee you, he trots one of these guys out there against Kent State, no matter how healthy they are.
Right.
And they get hurt. Why'd you play him? Stupid. You know, he's going to catch all kinds
all season
of
long. I mean,
you yes, know. they will. I mean, the pitchforks will be out and rightfully so. If that happened, you know, I mean, if given they're coming off of injury, if they weren't, yes, of course they'd play,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I understand too. Sometimes, you know, I'm the same way. I would love to see Dylan Stewart and Jacarius Peake play against both teams. I would love, for just as like an observer and somebody that wants to watch it. Yeah, I want to watch it. And yeah, I'm sad they're not playing. But I would rather have, and all of you would probably rather have them healthy and ready to go for the stretch run, the back half of the year.
Right.
Give me that over these first two games and maybe even the first three, four, five, or six. I'm not saying they're not going to be back by Mississippi State. I'm just saying that it's sort of a no-brainer, given that they're coming off of an injury, even if they're practicing and working out and getting ready, to hold them for these games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're too valuable, and they play too important a position, and they're too good.
Right.
I mean, to sit there and play them.
You can't risk it.
So
the risk-reward is definitely not there to play them.
Yeah.
In the first two games. And depending on how you look defensively and offensively on the line, you know, maybe not game three.
No doubt. Gamecock Depression says, can't believe Michael Smith left to go be a depth piece. Oh, he'd be a depth piece here if he didn't get significantly with the program. Mm-hmm. So some guys got all the talent in the world. And, yeah. You know, so, but he was part of the Pete Golding campus tour. You know, I don't know that he was enrolled at Carolina again. Maybe he was, but he was coming back. I mean, but then all of a sudden, boom, Ole Miss. So good luck. Craiger mentions Brentwood Academy and Baylor are playing on ESPN2 tonight. It's Eric Kimry's team. I got your text earlier, Craig. I thought I'd responded. Maybe I didn't. I had a busy morning text messages-wise. Oh, X-Man says, 80s and 90s in Washington State, but the mornings are 55, 60. That's the way it is here. It's kind of mid-80s. Lance says, I just hate to see the official word on our guys, man. Wish we could be full health going into the season. Yeah, I mean, look, but Lance, like I said, he's sitting there at the Tennessee game, happy that they didn't re-injure themselves against those other two teams. I mean, I can, you know, I understand this. Craiger said Smitty and Bama is the week before. I don't know what that means.
Oh, so replying to Deputy Smitty saying that they played eight straight games, and
oh,
reminds him it was like, yeah, the third Saturday in October is the week before that.
Yeah, so. TD says, Shane Beamer's damned if he does, damned if he doesn't with this situation. Yeah, it's unfortunate.
It is. It's a no win. I mean, fortunately, if you're keeping up with us, then your expectations were already tempered about those two in the first two games.
Yeah, first two games. Yeah, narrowly, yeah. But, you know, the problem is some folks take it and apply it to the whole season.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Because it's like they were under the impression for whatever reason. Maybe it's because of something Beamer said. I don't know. But it was something Beamer said a long time ago. Maybe they're under the impression that's they just took whatever he said in March or whenever. You know, like nothing ever changes. There's no it's all a straight line and all that good stuff. So I understand people's frustration that if you convinced yourself of that, I think a lot of it is kind of just irrational.
Yeah.
You know, because they want to see him play against Kent. You know, I understand that. The worst ones are the NIL, the we're paying them, so we deserve to know their medical history.
That's right. Yeah. So now
I don't agree with that at all. At all. At all, you know. I mean, you don't get people's. I don't care.
The NFL gets paid too, and you know what? You know exactly as much for Stewart and Peake as you would for an NFL player. Like one of them has an issue with his back, and the other one has an issue with his knee, and they are, you know, recovering. The only thing you don't have is like, well, we'll put them on the PUP list or something like that. That's the one piece of this you don't get to know. Like, we're not we're putting him on IR and he's got to sit the first 4 weeks of the season out. It doesn't work like that around here. But as to the type of injury and the recovery time, you're, you know, finding out as much as you would about a professional player.
Yeah. And, you know, even if they were state employees, I mean, you know, you got to know inaccurately how much money they were making. You don't get to know, like, your kids' teachers' health histories. Right. You don't get to go get their chart from their doctor.
That's right. Oh, you had a sub today? Oh, let me put in my.
We'll see what she's doing.
That's right.
Hold She's up. Got a torn a clavicle wearing.
That's right. That's all right. I'll put in my FOIA for that, and we'll find out what's going
on. We'll find out
schoolhouse.
Schoolhouse. So anyway, that's just my two cents on it. But I say all that saying, you know, I think people are very excited and passionate about it, and it is very critical to get those two guys back.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And different people deal with things in different ways. Right? So I do understand all of that. There's nothing but love, but my goodness. Goodness gracious.
All right, man. Don't beat yourself up over this.
So Luke's got another good question here. After Jaden injury, so Harbor, Black, Murph, Bennett. And after that, Nitro Tuggle would be right there in that mix. And then I think you move on to Malik Clark. Oh, no, I'm sorry. After him, I would put Sequel Patterson, Malik Clark. Throw a little Lex Cyrus in there, a little Jordan Gideron. I'm probably leaving somebody out. And then, you know, you got Charlie Mullaly.
Mullaly, that's right.
Charlie Mullaly. Stone Furry is there as well. Yeah, so that's 11. I'm probably leaving somebody out.
And, I mean, you know, break glass in case of emergency at the position. But, you know, Caden Ramsey could probably play a few wide receiver plays. Yeah.
So there's still a lot of options there. Yeah. And Beamer, one of the things he told Jamie on Monday that was, I thought, interesting was he's every one of the receivers in the room has made a case for playing time.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen.
No.
I mean, trust me, there's guys on scholarship everywhere with getting NIL money everywhere are like, man, that guy's not making a case for playing time at all.
No. And consider the position group you're talking about, too. It's not one that really, you know, exudes. Not one that historically is not, let's say,
but, I mean,
entitled.
But the thing with this group, they have to produce. You know, you can't have a bunch of drop passes. You know, you can't run the wrong route. You know, all the things. You got to block. All those things, and you know, you got to produce. And if you don't with this group, given how competitive it is, you're going to lose your spot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's good. That's the whole iron. I'm tired of using iron sharpens iron. Everybody, that's guess who said the first person I ever heard say that? I think it was Will Muschamp.
That one William Larry Muschamp.
William Larry Muschamp. So, okay. The Beamer adjustments. Brent, I don't know what you're talking about. What Beamer adjustments are we talking about?
Oh, the board of trustees thing is what I'm
saying. No, I have no idea. I can't imagine it's anything significant.
No,
it may have something to do with Nike. It may have something to do with.
He's going to divert a portion of his paycheck to
the NIL fund. I don't know.
Boosters so that they can divert their booster money to the NIL fund. Because he can't fund personally the NIL budget.
Yeah. But
there are ways.
I don't know that that's happened. I don't know. I hadn't heard anything about that happening. I probably would have heard about that, but maybe not. So I don't know. I that's off my radar right now.
Yeah. I don't know. I just.
But yeah. Sorry, Bruin. If I have come up with an answer, I'll let you know.
Yeah, there he goes. Yeah.
David, he says, what have you heard on Stone Furry? Rumors are he's making plays. He has. Beamer mentioned him the other day. Yeah. He was an excellent high school football player. Like I said, I think we were talking about this in the second hour. Mm-hmm. Just because his last name's Furry, don't just think that's why he's on the team. He's really good. I mean, he's one of those guys in this system too. Guys like that that can run routes and dart around and have speed and hands, they can be quite dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Quite dangerous. So, yeah, Gamecock 346 with athletes, injuries. Does HIPAA law cover this too? The details, probably. I mean, and it technically it covers everything, 346. So it's like.
Yeah, I mean, they could literally not say anything to the coaching staff as to what is specifically wrong with them, and the coaching staff would have no redress whatsoever. Yeah.
So, X-Men says King Solomon was the first person to say iron sharpens iron. I'm on a heater then. I just credited Muschamp with that.
Who knows?
Man, listen, I'm going to tell you this right now before we get out of here off topic. I watched this preview of this movie, Whale Fall. And I am claustrophobic. Dude, apparently. It's not a bad idea for a movie, but it sucks. So apparently this kid's dad's a scuba diver or something that teaches him how to go caving and all this safety stuff. And his dad dies. So he goes scuba diving right off the coast, and a gigantic ass blue whale swallows him whole.
Oh, jeez.
And he's like Pinocchio. But in Pinocchio, he's sitting there with a candle. I don't know where he got it from. Light, you know. And there's like a nice apartment with the whale bones on it. Stomach's empty. You know, this is very claustrophobic. This is realistic. Like what it would actually be like to be swallowed by a whale. No,
I don't think so.
And keep in mind, I'm highly claustrophobic. Like one day I got on a plane to fly to Columbia from here and I was in the window seat. I was in first class because I got the upgrade. Doesn't the window seat feel?
Mm-hmm.
And this, you know, somebody larger than I sat next to me. And it had like this disgusting smell in Chinese food. I was like, but I was, and all of a sudden I text my wife, I'm about to get off this plane. I can't do it. Mm-hmm.
She's like, maybe you should lose some weight.
Okay.
No, I don't mind the window seat.
She just said, I don't mind, but I felt cramped. Okay. Yeah. So anywho, this thing, I mean, I got uncomfortable. I almost turned the,
Well, I mean, it's not like they portrayed in Pinocchio or.
Oh, hell know, no.
You get to walk around in that thing with a torch.
Exactly. Light. No, you're not going exploring. It's not like a little fun house.
No, that's right.
It's very narrow and there's sea creatures. I don't know, man. Anyway,
I wonder what the pressure effects would be like when the whale dives down, you know, to those depths that are just unnatural for us. Like, there's no way you'd survive that, right?
Well, I mean, but if you're inside, is this a pressurized whale?
That's right. Has this whale been properly pressurized?
I don't know. TD says, see you tomorrow. Deputy says, very high on Jalen Lane out of high school. Can't believe we didn't take him too small to play here. I thought he should have taken him out of the portal, definitely. Yeah. Once he proved it, you know, Brian's a good dude for him, you know. Me and Brian go way back. I couldn't be happier Jalen Lane is in the NFL, even playing for the Commanders.
Yeah.
I think he's a baller. His dad's a baller. It's kind of neat that somebody I've respected most of my life and known, been friends with most of my life. After he got fired from my alma mater for whatever reason, because God knows they hadn't done any better, you know, as far as, you know, getting back to the championship level. You know, he at least had him close. Had one bad year and they fired him.
Yeah.
To have that happen, and then now to have solved the riddle of winning at Westside in Anderson, which has always had potential but never put it together, and won a state championship there, and they may get a daggum another one with Bear Woods. And then to have his son work his way all the way up from Middle Tennessee to Virginia Tech to the National Football League. Man, that's something that makes me happy every single day of my life, thinking about the success Brian and Jalen have had.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks. He came on Four Quarter Friday the other day, so thank you. Shout out to Brian for doing that.
Yeah, that's my interview. Go check out Four Quarter Friday's YouTube page or podcast stream. It's there.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. 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 Check out the YouTube page. All right. Tomorrow's Friday. Thank God.
No.
scrimmage Saturday. Stay locked on to thebigspur.com, GamecockCentral.com. Tomorrow we'll have Strickland and maybe Flint. And I think Flint is coming on. And we'll have a blast, as always, for the Mad Dog Phil, Mullinax, J.C. Sherbert. Don't forget, fourquarterfriday.com tonight for high school action. There's like 20-something games. And then tomorrow night it kicks off for real. Live blog, folks. Don't require membership. Fourquarterfriday.com. Deputy Smitty does mention Jalen did cut up Dorman in the playoffs when they were at Culver. All right. See you later, folks.